Welcome to the Food Revolution Summit, where we explore how you can heal your body and your world with food. This is Ocean Robbins, and I am joined by my dad and colleague, John Robbins, in welcoming our guest, Chris Wark. Chris is a global health and wellness leader and author of the international bestseller, Chris Beat Cancer, A Comprehensive Plan for Healing Naturally. In 2003, at the age of 26, Chris was diagnosed with stage 3 colon cancer. After surgery, he used plant-based nutrition and natural therapies to heal. Today, he reaches millions of people through speaking and through his wildly popular website, chrisbeatcancer.com. His mission is to inspire people to take control of their health and show them simple diet and lifestyle changes that can have a huge impact towards cancer prevention and survival. So now, Chris, we're so grateful for your work and for this time with you. And now for the interview, I'm going to hand it over to my dad and colleague, John Robbins.
Well, thank you, Ocean, for that introduction. And thank you, Chris, for being with us once again.
It is my pleasure. I have great, deep affection for both of you. I just think you're both so terrific and amazing, and I'm proud to be on the same team and proud to be on the summit again. I just love talking to you both. Love what you're doing, and it's always fun.
It is always fun, and it's humbling to hear you say that. I'm very proud of what you have been accomplishing. You're reaching ever more and more people with a beautiful message. And the work you're doing stems, it's grown out of your own journey with cancer. Your personal story has inspired a huge number of people. Can you begin our interview by telling our listeners briefly what happened to you and why you decided to go public and tell people about it?
Yes, I'd love to. And my story is like a lot of stories in that my pain became my purpose and my mess became my message. And I think a lot of people who are devoting their life to helping others and serving others in some way are doing it because of a unique or very difficult challenge that they had to live through, and it changed who they are. It taught them more than they can even express about life. And so I feel like myself and I know both of you and so many others of us in this space are really just trying to give back and trying to share what we've learned and encourage people and inspire them and give them hope. And not just that, but also information and tools and resources that they can use to help themselves. And I feel like there's no better way to live your life or to earn a living or to pursue a profession than one that is devoted on helping other people. It's just the best.
Well, as you've become more successful and your work has been reaching more people, there are some defenders of the cancer establishment, people who are invested in chemotherapy as a treatment, people who think that dietary and lifestyle changes are futile against the ravages of cancer and therefore really should not be taken seriously. These folks, some of them have taken it upon themselves to attack you and to criticize your work. Now, some of our summit participants may have heard or may in the future hear these kinds of attacks against you, some of which I have read and I consider them to be intensely mean-spirited, honestly. Chris, is there anything you would like our participants to know to set the record straight?
I just learned right away that I don't take those things personally. And, you know, I just have learned to accept that if 99 people say, thank you so much, there's going to be one person that says, you're pure evil. there's nothing I can do about it. And I really focus my attention on helping the people that want my help. And I'm not trying to convince someone who's my enemy or my opponent or is against me or decided they don't like me. I just accept it. Like, there's people that aren't going to like me. People are going to be mean to me. And I also made a decision to forgive them. There's too much important work to be done. There's too many people that need help for me to waste any time and attention on people who attack me and want to troll me or criticize me. So having said that, you know, I was diagnosed with stage 3 colon cancer when I was 26. It was 2003, December, is a few days before Christmas. And, you know, it's terrible news. Cancer. I mean, it's the worst news ever, besides someone that you love just dying. You know, it's like they're basically telling you, you have a terminal illness that is likely to kill you. And at 26, it's especially scary because I still felt like a kid. I did not feel like a grown-up. I still felt like a very young person. And I felt like I had just barely started living. I was only 2 years out of college, a newlywed, and, you know, just barely just trying to just get something going in my life. And I was in real estate and I was excited about that career and renovating houses and excited about my new marriage. And I was playing a lot of music and writing songs and playing shows. And, you know, things were just great. I was really ambitious and really excited about my life. And then I started having abdominal pain. And for about 6 months, it would kind of come and go. And finally, it got really bad. And I got referred to a gastroenterologist and they did a colonoscopy. And there was a tumor, golf ball sized tumor in my colon. That's the large intestine. For anyone that doesn't know that the colon is also a body part, in addition to a punctuation mark. And they said, look, we got to get you into surgery right away and get this thing out before it spreads and kills you. And they biopsied it. It was confirmed cancer. And so at that moment, you know, with the cancer diagnosis, I mean, everything goes into slow motion. And it's like when a loved one dies, your whole world stops, except the rest of the world keeps going. You know what I mean? Everybody's in their cars, driving places, going, doing things, you know, just like living their life. And your life is like in shambles, you know, burying a loved one. Well, it's the same thing with cancer. And so everything came to a grinding halt. All my ambition and hopes and dreams and all that just kind of like went out the window. And now the conversation is like, how much time do I have left? Is this going to kill me? Like, what is my future going to be? The future I was working toward evaporated, essentially. So that's really tough. It's really scary. And it's scary at any age. But, you know, if you're 80 or 90 and you get cancer, it's like, well, okay, you lived a long life and it's not as scary. So I had surgery on December 30th. They took out a third of my large intestine. When I woke up, they said, it's worse than we thought. It spread to your lymph nodes. We took everything we could see, but you're going to need 9 to 12 months of chemotherapy because they knew that, you know, cancer cells are microscopic. You can have millions and millions of cancer cells in a tiny, tiny little spot, you know, or you can have millions of cancer cells circulating in your blood that are virtually undetectable. What we also know is that cancer cells start leaving a primary tumor site before it's even big enough to detect. So before a tiny little cancerous lesion is big enough to detect, cancer cells have already started leaving and circulating in your blood and your lymphatic system and looking for new places to set up shop and form new tumors. Fortunately, a tiny fraction of a percent of those cancer cells ever do form a new tumor somewhere else because your immune system usually mops them up. That's what it's designed to do. So it's important to make this point that your immune system is the most powerful weapon you have against cancer forming in your body, against cancer spreading and to other organs and killing you. And so your immune system is key to prevention and healing and survival. But this is not a conversation that I ever had with a doctor. So I wake up, like I said, they told me it was worse than they thought. I needed 9 to 12 months of chemotherapy. And, you know, this is the food revolution. So like the part of my story, my story really starts out with a food story because the first meal that I was served in the hospital as a cancer patient, the first meal after they took out a third of my large intestine and sewed it back together, right? And the whole point is like, okay, you need to eat and then you need to have a normal poop. So we know that there's no problem with the surgery. So the first thing they gave me to eat was a sloppy Joe.
Oh my. That's about the lowest of the lowest.
It is the lowest of the low, right? Nobody likes them. This is cafeteria food for military personnel, maybe some high school or elementary school lunchrooms, definitely in prison. You're going to get a sloppy Joe, probably at least once a week.
Okay. and apparently in a hospital if you're just recovering from a colon surgery.
Surprise. Yeah. Surprise. And I believe me, I was just as shocked when they brought it. I was like, gross. Like, really? This is the best you got? Not to mention that we know now that, red meat, which I'm assuming was what was the sloppy Joe was made out of, is a group 2 human carcinogen. It's multiple studies have linked it to colon cancer. Processed meat, that's bacon, hot dogs, ham, deli meats, sausages, a lot of the other stuff that they're serving in hospitals for breakfast every day, are a group 1 human carcinogen, known to cause cancer with the same level of evidence as cigarettes and formaldehyde and asbestos. So we have a food problem in the Western world. Food is causing most of our diseases. Most cancers are caused by our diet. So again, this is more information I did not learn from my doctor. Okay. So you just got to imagine 26-year-old Chris, who knows nothing about nutrition or cancer or medicine or health or anything, sitting there in a hospital room, just like a typical cancer patient, just nodding at whatever the doctor says I need to do. So the other thing that happened is on the day they told me I could go home, my surgeon came in to check on me. And we're having a conversation. And I said, hey, is there any food I need to avoid? Because in the back of my mind, I'm thinking like, okay, they just cut me open. They cut my digestive tract, cut a section out of it and sewed it back together. Like, I don't want to eat the wrong thing and like screw it up, right? Like, is hot sauce okay or not? And he said, no, just don't lift anything heavier than a beer. I was like, okay. And that was it. That was all the dietary advice I got from my abdominal surgeon.
Did you eat the sloppy Joe?
I did. Yeah, definitely. I mean, look, I was hungry because I hadn't eaten in about 2 days because I had to fast the day before surgery. And then I was like out for almost a whole day.
Yeah.
And yeah, I ate it for sure. I was hungry. So I get home from surgery and I'm just thinking about my life and I prayed and I just said, God, I don't know what to do. Like chemotherapy didn't feel like the right choice for me. I mean, I knew in my core how fragile and weak and physically vulnerable I was. And I mean, I was somewhere under 140 pounds, 6'2", practically emaciated from being sick and in the hospital and stuff. And I'm just like, there's no way. Like this, I can't do this right now. My body can't handle it. So I just said, God, I'd like help. I don't know what to do. If there's another way besides chemo, please show me. I don't know. I'm lost. This doesn't feel right. I don't have peace about it. And I got a book in the mail written by, an old guy named George Malkmus. And George had had colon cancer 30 years before me and didn't have surgery or chemo or anything. He adopted a raw diet, started juicing. And within about a year, his tumor was gone. His body healed it. And so I read his story and I was like, oh my gosh. Like, okay, like this makes sense. I believe the body can heal. I believe the body created this problem and the body can heal it. I had the wake up moment, the light bulb where I was like, oh, the reason so many of us are getting cancer, heart disease, and diabetes is largely because of the food we're eating. Like, whoa, okay, this is a bigger deal than I thought. And then it started to make sense to me. And so overnight, I converted to a raw diet, plant-based, 100%, all raw, and went out and bought a juicer, like, a giant 25-pound bag of carrots. And I'm like, I'm doing this. Like, I'm going to transform my diet. I'm going to transform my body. I'm going to overdose on nutrition. This is my plan. The worst that can happen is it doesn't help me, right? But this is not going to hurt me in any way. And when I was looking at chemotherapy, I was thinking, well, this is definitely going to hurt, right? I'm going to suffer. There's going to be a lot of damage to my body. And the worst that can happen is it doesn't work and it wrecks my body, right? It's like, I need to build up my body. I need to strengthen my immune system. Maybe I need to detoxify.
And you're thinking, no, I don't want to do chemotherapy. It's toxic. It can't be good for me. Your instinct is to try something very different that the oncological community as a whole doesn't really respect or understand, namely, in your case, a raw foods diet, plant-based diet, all plants, and lots of juices and over-nutrition, just as you often put it, overdosing on nutrition. And it worked for you. It led you to your whole life. As you said, your mess became your message and your pain became your purpose, which is just beautifully put. Can you explain why you say that and help us to understand what you mean when you say that?
For me, in the beginning, I was only focused on getting well. And I, like you said, I took massive action. I created a simple daily routine for myself that was just focused on hardcore anti-cancer nutrition and removing stress from my life and exercising. And I just rearranged my whole life and eliminated everything that I could find that might have been contributing to my disease. I got well. And 6 years later, I decided to share my story. So I didn't jump right out there. I waited because I didn't want to mislead people. I didn't want to be wrong. Like, what if I'm just lucky? Or what if this doesn't work? Or what if it comes back? So I just kept reading and researching and finding more and more people that had done the same thing I did. And I became so excited to share those stories and to talk to those people and learn from them and find the common threads between us. And so the more people I talked to with, like I said, all types and stages of cancer that had healed, the more I realized like healing is possible. And the most important thing for someone who is trying to heal a disease like cancer is they have to believe that it's possible. Like that's where it starts. You have to believe that it's possible. In order to believe that it's possible, you need to hear the testimonials of others who've done it. And so that's sort of the foundation of everything that I did and everything that I encourage people to do just starts with this thing, this idea that like you have to believe that your body can heal. Cancer cells are your cells. Your body created this problem. Your body can heal it if given the proper nutrients and care. And that sounds overly simple, but it's a very big thing, right?
It's also a very big step for a lot of people. We have normalized a way of eating and a food supply that's carcinogenic in many respects.
Yes.
We have an overwhelming number of studies telling us that what we eat and what we don't eat has an enormous impact on our cancer risk. And I'm thinking particularly now of a study that came out in 2018 that found that every 10% increase in consumption of ultra-processed foods increases your cancer risk by 12%. Now, the scary reality of that is that the average person in the U.S. today is getting 64% of their total calories from ultra-processed foods. That's the average person. There are many people getting more than that. The diet we see eaten around us every day, all around us, is so high in refined carbs and processed foods and sugar and meat and other animal products. It's clearly cancer promoting. And I wish more people realized the enormous anti-cancer power that they can put into their bodies by eating whole, colorful plant foods. And I want to ask you, Chris, what is what you referred to it a moment ago, a hardcore anti-cancer diet or nutrition plan?
What I did and what I encourage people to do is to eat a whole foods, plant-based diet, like eat whole fruits and vegetables in their natural state. They can be raw or they can be cooked. That's both are great in different ways. But what I did was I went, you know, you talked about ultra-processed food, right? I was eating tons of ultra-processed food. I was typical American, pizza and burgers and fries and, you know, chicken nuggets and like, you know, microwave lasagnas, you know, microwave sausage biscuits for breakfast, crappy sugary cereal, you know, just supersize me, fast food meals. That was what I lived on for at least 10 years of my life. Now, people can live on that stuff a lot longer before it catches up to them. It just got me early. Was I genetically predisposed in some way? Maybe, yeah, but whatever. Like, it got me early. I went from eating 1 to 2 servings of fruits and vegetables on a good day, right? That's like if I had a banana and, you know, maybe my wife made some dinner and there was like some broccoli or something on the plate, to eating between 15 and 20 servings of fruits and vegetables every single day, every day, every day, every day. So the compounds in blueberries, in green tea, in garlic, in broccoli, in onions, in mushrooms, in apples, in, you know, pomegranates, like they're almost, pick a fruit, pick a vegetable. There's a study talking about the anti-cancer compounds in that plant. So the cool thing is there's studies now, and it used to be, they used to say, oh, 5 servings a day is ideal. You need 5 servings a day. Now they're like, no, no, no. You need 10 servings a day. Well, that doesn't leave much room for junk food, meat and dairy, right? If you're eating 10 servings a day of fruits and vegetables. But I was eating 15 to 20 because I was also juicing. So I was juicing carrots and beets and celery, all kinds of good stuff. And I was drinking about 64 ounces every single day throughout the day of fresh vegetable juice in addition to my meals. Like I said, I was trying to overdose on nutrition. I was just trying to pump as much stuff into my body as I could. And I kind of, you know, it was kind of like, look, I'm pretty confident that none of this will hurt me, right? I don't think you can die from too much carrot juice. I did learn you will turn orange, which I did, but I did not die and I did not suffer any long-term effects and I did not stay orange. So that's good. But no, I was visibly orange. Everyone who knows me, knew me at that time, noticed. I mean, it was funny. It was comical. But I just wanted to give my body an abundance, like to treat it in a way that I'd never done before. And I just thought, you know what? I'm going to give it an abundance of nutrition and I'll let my body use what it needs. And, you know, I'll pee out the rest. It's fine. But I don't want to be deficient in any aspect. What we know now is that a diet that's centered around fruits and vegetables is the most protective. Even though I didn't do chemo, I've never told anyone don't do chemo. I talk about the cancer industry very candidly in my book. I talk about the perils and pitfalls of treatment. I talk about the dangers of treatment. I help people understand what they're getting into before they say yes, so they can make the best decision for them. Because most patients are just rushed into treatment with high hopes, not realizing the treatment has, you know, in some cases, may have zero benefit, may actually make things worse, can cause cancer stem cells to become more aggressive, can destroy your liver and your immune system, and do more harm than good. And so every patient has to make their own decision about what makes sense for them, but they got to be educated first and they have to ask the right questions. And I have a free download on my website. It's called 20 Questions for Your Oncologist. There's a link to it on every page of chrisbeatcancer.com. And that will empower anybody listening. If you have cancer or a loved one has cancer, go to my site, download that free guide, and it will empower you with the absolute best, most critical questions to ask your doctor before saying yes to treatment. So you can really understand if it's the best choice for you, because doctors don't have that much time with patients and they don't have time to tell you everything you need to know. And most patients don't ask the right questions. They just want to know, am I going to get sick? Is my hair going to fall out? Am I going to miss work? Right? They're not asking, is this going to cure me or not? Right? There's question number one. Will this cure my cancer? This is a yes or no. It's shocking how many patients are scared to ask that question because they're scared of the answer they might get.
Well, they might not understand the answer they might get because sometimes language is used about that's actually misleading.
Yes. Yeah, it's true. Medical jargon is very misleading, especially in cancer. They use words, I talk about this in my book, they use words like respond, like, well, your cancer, your type of cancer is shown to respond very well to this particular drug regimen. And it's this particular drug regimen is very effective for your type of cancer.
What is the reality behind words like respond and effective?
So to you and me, when we hear those words, or as a patient, you're thinking, oh, effective. Yeah, that's what I want. I want effective. Effective, that means cure. Respond, that means cure, but it doesn't mean cure. It means shrinkage. That's what it means. It means like, yeah, you know, your tumor's...
Temporary shrinkage.
Yes, John. It means temporary tumor shrinkage. That is typically what they mean when they say this drug is effective or this drug, your tumor should respond to this drug. It doesn't mean cure. It just means it's a short-term solution to, unfortunately, a long-term problem. And what happens in many cases is that a tumor may shrink, but the treatment also makes the cancer stem cells more aggressive and destroys the patient's immune system. So then the cancer comes raging back because their immune system's wiped out and the cancer stem cells are now more aggressive. So, you know, it's like, oh, it's great when it shrinks and everybody's excited and celebrates and like wants to have a big party after they get the news that the tumor shrunk. But the sad thing is in a few months, things usually take a really dramatic turn. And the next scan, it's like, uh-oh, there's spots in your liver now, spots in your bones, your brain, your lungs. It doesn't have to be that way. And even if a patient does chemo, even if they do exactly everything their doctor says, there's so much more they can do at home to increase their odds of survival. And that's where food comes in. You see, fruits and vegetables are amazing for your body. They will help you. They will help you feel better during treatment. They will help treatment work better. They will increase your odds of survival, decrease your risk of recurrence. There is a wonderful study on breast cancer where they found that breast cancer patients who ate an average of 5 servings of fruits and vegetables per day, which is very doable, and walked an average of about 30 minutes a day. Okay, so 5 servings of fruits and vegetables a day and walked 30 minutes a day had a 50% decreased risk of recurrence after 9 years. And these aren't breast cancer patients that are going all natural. These are patients that did all the normal treatment, everything their doctor recommended. They cut their risk of recurrence in half just from fruits and vegetables and a little bit of exercise. Like so this is the message that is most important, right? Is that a patient has control and power over their future. They have power over their health and their healing, but it requires action, right? If you just want to go and get treatments and sit in the chair and get chemo and go home and sleep and eat junk food, then your odds of survival are not going to be as good as the patient who says, you know what? I'm taking control of my life. I'm changing my life. I'm focusing on health and healing. I'm going to do everything in my power to help my body heal. If chemo and radiation and surgeries are included in that, that's fine. But guess what? There's so much more you can do. And so that's the position I come from. Like I never criticize anyone for doing chemo. I never tell people not to do chemo, but I do criticize the cancer industry because by and large, it is run by the pharmaceutical industry. Patients are being rushed into treatment out of fear. They're being misled. Their hopes are high in the beginning and quickly shattered when they realize that the treatment didn't cure them. And they've endured months of brutal treatments only to be met with disappointing news. So yeah, I don't pull any punches when it comes to the cancer industry and the ineffectiveness of certain treatments for some types of cancer. It's important that people understand that their choices matter, that what you put in your mouth every day can create health or disease in your body tomorrow. And so I eat healthy today because I want to be healthy tomorrow. Exercise is so incredible. It's so underrated. When you exercise, you switch on genes in your body that are anti-cancer, anti-aging, survival genes. You flip those genes on when you exercise. You are sending signals of life to your body when you exercise. Exercise improves cancer survival. There's been study after study after study. It just does. You just got to do it. Doesn't matter what kind. Any kind of exercise where you're sweating, your heart's pumping, you're breathing heavy, you know, maybe you're jogging, you're doing Jazzercise or Zumba or CrossFit. It really doesn't matter if it's vigorous. And by the way, that other study I mentioned earlier, even just walking, right? At the absolute least, if you can just get outside and do some walking, it's good for you.
You know, you were talking about how you help people to ask the right questions of their cancer physicians, their oncologists, and so forth. And I think that's a wonderful service that's available to people at your website, chrisbeatcancer.com. One thing, though, is it's hard for some people to grasp how little most doctors actually know about nutrition. We expect that our physicians will be experts on the body, on what will make us healthy, when in fact their training has been in disease management and in disease diagnosis. And the management practices are generally drugs and surgery. They really haven't learned anything about prevention or anything about building optimal health or anything about the incredible powers of nutrition, even though, as you've mentioned, there are study after study after study after study coming out every day with this information. This was driven home to me recently. This year's annual meeting of the American Association for Cancer Research. It's an annual event. It was in San Diego this year. It drew more than 22,000 researchers and doctors and other health professionals. And there was an evening reception, and it featured a buffet that included very thick slabs of roast beef and a huge variety of rich cheeses and an enormous dessert buffet. Chris, it just boggles my mind that they would serve food like this at a cancer research event.
I know, man.
You know, at a time when we know how many cancers are being caused by obesity and by bad diet. And I just see this disconnect as being an example of what happens when there's this much money involved. I mean, in the U.S. today, cancer inflicts an economic cost of nearly $1 trillion annually. I'm not saying doctors are greedy. I am saying that the system itself is built in such a way that health building approaches and cancer preventing approaches don't make anybody money hardly. And so they're just not a part of the equation too often.
Most doctors are really good people who got into medicine for good reasons and care about their patients, but they're trained in a system that was created by the pharmaceutical industry, and they're trained to prescribe drugs to treat symptoms. That's what they're trained to do. They're trained to cut out body parts if they're not functioning properly, right? I interviewed Dr. Pamela Weibel on the blog a couple of years ago, and she talks about how brutal med school is and how most people don't know that doctors have the highest rates of suicide of any profession, because being a doctor is really hard, and med students have higher rates than practicing doctors. And because it is a grueling, brutal process to go through med school. It's not unlike going through the military. You know, it's very difficult emotionally, psychologically, physically, and it's very conformist. There's a lot of pressure to conform, and it's brutal. Okay, and so you've got all these brilliant people going into med school with high hopes of making a difference in the world and saving people's lives and doing good, and they're ground up in this meat grinder. And they invest 10 or 12 years of their life in med school and residency and finally get into private practice. And it costs, borrow all this money, you know, right? Student loans and all this. And they find themselves trapped in a system that pays them pretty good, right? But doesn't really give them the tools to help people restore their health. They're only given tools to help people manage their diabetes, manage their heart disease, manage their cancer, in some cases cure, you know, with lymphomas and childhood leukemia and testicular cancer. Those are highly curative cancers. But the majority of solid tumor cancers, breast, liver, colon, lung, brain, ovarian, cervical, those type of cancers have much lower cure rates and much worse survival rates than blood-based type cancers.
I want to switch gears here for a moment and ask you about something else. You recently wrote an article titled "The Evidence Against the Ketogenic Diet for Cancer." In that article, you wrote that you used to think that the ketogenic diet might be a viable anti-cancer diet for some people, but you now think that you were wrong about that. And what I want to ask you, Chris, is why did you write this article? Can you explain what your views are now and what they're based on regarding the ketogenic diet and cancer?
back in 2012, some studies and evidence really started to pop up about the ketogenic diet, and the chatter, you know, started to really pick up speed with regard to the ketogenic diet and cancer, and how this novel approach of, you know, removing all carbohydrates from the diet and eating a diet that was all fat would somehow starve cancer cells, because everybody knows that cancer cells feed on sugar. So that's the premise, right? Well, sugar feeds cancer. Just remove all carbohydrates from your diet. Only eat fat and a tiny amount of protein, and then that'll starve the cancer cells and they die. And in theory, that's very interesting, right? Like, oh, wow. But what I started seeing was between 2012 and 2018, when I wrote that article, I saw a lot of patients adopt a ketogenic diet and die. And I realized, like, okay, this isn't working. It's definitely not what I did. And it's definitely not the diet that pretty much everyone I know who has healed cancer against the odds, you know, with a holistic approach, a radical remission survivor. Another great book, by the way, for anybody's listening, Radical Remission by Dr. Kelly Turner. This is not the diet that all of us holistic survivors followed. And I don't think it's a good idea, especially not as a first dietary approach. I still think that the dietary approach that I followed that has the most evidence is the best first approach, and really the best last approach too. So anyway, I started to get more and more reservations about it, and I kind of kept quiet, you know, for years and just observed. And then finally, more and more studies came out, and the human studies started coming out. And those human studies found that the ketogenic diet did not improve survival. It definitely didn't cure anyone's cancers, and there was no benefit to it. And then in some cases, there's certain types of cancer that actually prefer fatty acids. You see, the idea that cancer cells use glucose for fuel is only half true, because cancer cells can also use fat for fuel and protein. So cancer is a little more complex than just saying sugar feeds cancer. So yeah, there are certain cancers that a ketogenic diet will accelerate the growth of that cancer. I talk about that in the article. So if anyone wants to read it, it's long, and I cite all the studies, and I summarize them and explain them and link to them, and you can go down the rabbit hole. But if you go to Chris Beat Cancer and type in ketogenic in the search bar, you'll find the article. There's no precedent anywhere in the world for any population of people eating this way that has exceptional health and longevity. The only population of people that eats a diet that's that high in fat are the Eskimos and the Inuit. They're not in ketosis because they've been studied. So they're not technically eating ketogenic, even though they're eating high fat. And they have really short lifespans. So, I mean, you know, who wants to imitate a diet of a people group that doesn't live very long, right? It's not a good idea. So whether it's for cancer or weight loss or anything else, it's a terrible diet. It's a fad. It's unnatural, unsustainable, unhealthy. I oppose it.
I hear you. I hear you. I'm thinking about how people with a new cancer diagnosis, they've just gotten that bad news, and they're feeling vulnerable and they're feeling scared. And adding to this distress is the fact that they know that most treatments for cancer, especially chemo, can come with some pretty unpleasant side effects. So they're facing a lot of horror, the diagnosis, the treatment.
Yeah.
And they might start searching for information and for community, for support online. But Chris, a person looking online today can come across some pretty dubious misinformation. They can come across people saying ketogenic diets cure cancer. They can come across, I've seen claims that drinking baking soda will cure cancer, or that smelling essential oils will cure cancer. I mean, there's a lot of this out there. It's a virtual sea of misinformation. So
yes,
you've created your website, chrisbeatcancer.com. And I think you've done so partially to address this problem.
Yes.
What are you offering on your website?
I'm so glad you brought this up, because this is a great thing that I don't get to talk about much in interviews, which is the fact that, you know, we live in the misinformation age now. It's unfortunate. And the disinformation age. There's people putting out disinformation on purpose, right? And then there's other people that are just misinformed, and they're sharing stuff that's just wrong. But they think it's right, you know? They mean well. And it's easier than ever because of social media, and it's easy to start a blog and all this kind of stuff. And so, you know, when I kind of dipped my toe in the water of like being a public figure and sharing my story publicly and all that, you know, I realized really quickly that like I need to make sure that I'm not spreading misinformation. This is important to me. And so that's, like I said earlier, when I started really researching the anti-cancer nutrition science and lifestyle medicine and all these things, and finding evidence to support what I believed was true, and sometimes evidence that proved me wrong. Then I was like, okay, I'm wrong about this. But yeah, there are still a lot of people in the natural health and wellness world that are promoting pretty quacky, you know, type of ideas. And any, I think just in general, you want to be wary of any miracle cure type claim, right? Magic bullet, miracle cure, you know, this supplement, this herb, this essential oil, you know, baking soda, like this one thing cures cancer. Like, no, it doesn't. Okay. It doesn't. It might have some benefit in the body, but it ain't going to cure it alone. That's pretty unlikely. Now, what I have seen many, many times over and documented in Kelly Turner's book, Radical Remission, which I mentioned, and the Spontaneous Remission Project, and on YouTube, I mean, all over the internet, you know, all these wonderful testimonials of people who've healed, is you see people who took massive action and transformed their whole life. You know, they're not, it's not, oh, I just did this one little thing and my cancer went away. It's like, no, I changed everything. I changed the way I was thinking. I changed what I was eating. I started exercising. I addressed the stress in my life, because stress leads us to behavior that is self-destructive. You know, cigarettes are a major cause of cancer. An unhealthy diet leading to obesity is the second leading cause of cancer. Well, what is leading us to eat so much bad food and junk food? And what's leading us to smoke cigarettes and abuse drugs and alcohol? It's stress. Stress is leading us to cope, right? To self-medicate with things that are not healthy. And it leads people to become workaholics and addicted to pornography and all kinds of destructive behaviors. And so if you don't address the root cause of most disease, many diseases, which is really stress, then you may not get well, right? You can eat healthy stuff and take supplements and herbs and do lots of therapies, but if you're sick on the inside, and I mean like your heart is sick, it's going to be really tough for your body to get well if you have a sick heart. And so I had to look inside and realize, like, I was a negative, cynical, critical, kind of mean-spirited person. Even though I was a believer and a Christian and trying to be good, I was also, you know, like anybody else, I'm human. I'm wrestling with just bad attitudes, right? And thoughts that are negative. And so I had to catch myself in those patterns that I had developed growing up and start interrupting negative thoughts and being critical and judgmental and cynical and beating myself up and insecurities and right, jealousy and envy, bitterness, resentment, unforgiveness, like all of these negative emotions. And so that was a huge part of the process for me. And I talk about this in great length in my book too, about getting to the mental and emotional and spiritual root causes, identifying them and dealing with them in your life. And so just to make sure you've uncovered every rock and to make sure that there's nothing, there's no barrier, there's nothing in the way of healing. There's nothing preventing you from getting well, emotionally, psychologically, spiritually, or physically. So the big, big thing and the big lever that I want to encourage your listeners to pull, the big stress-producing lever, is forgiveness. Forgiveness is one of the most powerful things that you can do for yourself, for you. It's not for the person who hurt you. It's for you. Forgiveness actually frees you from a prison of pain. Because when you hold on to bitterness and resentment, right, from the past, anger from people who've hurt you from your past, you're actually keeping yourself in a state of pain, emotional and psychological pain. And there's no way out of it until you forgive. I don't want to demystify forgiveness. Forgiveness is not a feeling. It's a choice, right? This is a choice. It is a mental, logical choice. And your feelings will change after you choose to forgive. Your feelings don't change before, because a lot of people are like, well, I'll forgive them when I'm ready. You may never be ready. And so the point is, just forgive them now and be done with it. Move on. I just say a quick prayer when someone hurts my feelings. I'm like, God, hey, this hurts, right? But I'm choosing to forgive them. I'm letting it go. I'm giving it to you. They're all yours. You can handle it. I'm not holding any animosity or anger or bitterness anymore. And I'm asking you to bless them. Just bless them. And I can't tell you how powerful that is. Just that simple decision that you can make right now for anyone in your life who's hurt you. And you can release yourself from a prison of pain.
It's a profoundly uplifting thing to do, an expansive thing to do for our hearts and our souls and our experience of ourselves in life. I have often thought of forgiveness as something we do for ourselves.
Yes.
And it may be of benefit to others, but if we do it for ourselves, we will get that benefit. And Chris, your story is an inspiring one, and you're a living testimony to the power of forgiveness, to the power of excellent nutrition, to not just greatly reduce our cancer risk, but to play an important role in healing from it, if we have it. When you say that your pain has become your purpose and your mess has become your message, those are actually pithy but profound statements. And on behalf of everyone involved in the food revolution, everyone who plans on eating for the rest of their life, certainly on behalf of Ocean and myself, I want to thank you for sharing your journey so honestly and for your profound commitment to helping people and, of course, for being with us today.
Thank you, John. It's a privilege and a joy to get to do what I do, to get to share my story, to get to encourage people and hopefully help them. You know, help them make the best decisions for them and help them find the solutions they're looking for and take care of themselves and especially help them forgive the people that have hurt them.
We've been talking with Chris Work, author of Chris Beat Cancer, A Comprehensive Plan for Healing Naturally. Chris, when we think about cancer, most people feel a great deal of fear, but you bring so much kindness, clarity, and knowledge. And now you're helping hundreds of thousands of people navigate challenging waters with steadiness, with wisdom, with love, and with forgiveness. We thank you for your courage, for your story, for your wisdom, and for your partnership in the food revolution.
Thank you, Ocean. Thank you, John. Love you guys.